Coming up on Tech News Today, the U.S. government and tech companies swapping more data. The junior hires swap spit. Microsoft Office comes to the iPhone, and your genes are not patentable. Whew. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, June 14th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT6. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. Try to put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Wow. The long-rumored Microsoft Office app for Apple's iOS finally arrived today with Excel, Word, and PowerPoint support. Only comes in an iPhone version, although you can still use that on an iPad, and requires an Office 365 subscription. All files must be in SkyDrive or SharePoint, though. It will do offline editing. You can buy an Office 365 subscription through the app, which must mean that Microsoft and Apple worked out their revenue sharing differences.
Thousands of technology, finance, and manufacturing companies are working closely with the U.S. national security agencies and giving them sensitive information, and in return, getting benefits that include access to classified intelligence for people, tell Bloomberg. Probably time to start panicking. These programs, whose participants are supposedly trusted partners, go a lot deeper than even what was revealed by Edward Snowden, who was the computer technician who did work for the NSA.
The Wall Street Journal reports that due to their partial foreign ownership, T-Mobile and Verizon do not directly participate in NSA's call metadata collection program. The journal says that the officials believe they still can capture information on 99% of U.S. phone traffic since they travel over networks owned by U.S. companies that do work with the NSA.
Well, that's a relief. Pando Daily's Michael Carney reports sources close to Hulu's sale negotiations say DirecTV has taken the lead. The sources describe negotiations as being in a very advanced stage and expect the deal to close before the end of June. The acquisition price will reportedly be written with a B, British pounds or Bahraini dinar, maybe buyer's remorse.
Ooh.
Beefcake.
Eddie Q, you know, Apple's senior vice president of internet software and services that can still innovate, said on Thursday in district court in Lower Manhattan that he had to convince Steve Jobs to let him even pursue an e-book store. Before the iPad launched, Q said Apple should have a bookstore for its iPhone and Macs, but Jobs said those products weren't ideal for reading. Quote, Steve said, it's fine, go do this, but get the deals done in January so I can demo on stage, said Q.
Filmmaker Jennifer Nelson has filed a lawsuit against Warner Music seeking to invalidate the company's copyright to the song Happy Birthday to You. Nelson's argument is that the song is based on a public domain song called Good Morning to All. The lawsuit wants Happy Birthday to You in the public domain and asks for Warner to pay back the millions of dollars it's made in unlawful revenue.
BMI, one of the companies that collects royalties for music publishers, has filed a lawsuit against Pandora in New York federal court. Pandora acquired a radio station and argues it now should pay the more favorable rates that radio station owners like Clear Channel pay for their digital services like iHeartRadio. BMI called it a stunt and will argue that terrestrial rates should not apply to Pandora's digital business.
The Supreme Court says human genes isolated by scientists may not, in fact, be patented. The court ruled unanimously in a dispute brought on by the ACLU against Myriad Genetics, weighing intellectual property against genes associated with genes known to detect early signs of breast and ovarian cancer.
Facebook announced it will stop showing sponsored results in its search tool starting in July. Facebook began showing sponsored results in search last August, so it doesn't even make it a year. Businesses will continue to be able to use mobile app install ads along with post link ads, so don't worry. Oh, yeah, you're still going to see ads.
Yeah, you're still getting ads. The Financial Times reports that the antitrust watchdog of Brussels is looking into whether Google engaged in anti-competitive deals to further Android. Allegations include Google offering cut-price licensing and exclusive deals. Currently, this is an informal investigation, and Brussels has been looking into Android for more than 1 year.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform to make an amazing blog. I use it to make myself look like I know half a thing about design. In fact, they make me look better than that. They've got award-winning designs. I just pick. Boom. All of a sudden, my site looks great. I can change some colors if I want, move some things around, even get there underneath and tweak the code if I really know what I'm doing, even though I don't. At least not design-wise. But if you do know a little HTML, which I do know, then you can go in there and move some stuff around. But the best thing about Squarespace is you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. If you just want to focus on the content, get in there and do it. Post some stuff. Import your old blog. See what it looks like. You can even run a store. They have a new commerce tool. They've got a fast and easy-to-use drag-and-drop layout. So like I said, when you're thinking about your content, you don't have to think about how it's constructed. You just move stuff around. Just a few clicks, style editor tool allows selection of fonts, colors, layouts. It's the best blogging tool that I have used. So why not give it a shot? Try it out for free. You don't have to give them a credit card or nothing. Squarespace integrates all your website needs into one platform. Domain names, design, development, commerce, hosting, 24/7 customer support. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com, sign up for an account. Like I said, you don't need to give them anything but an email address. No credit card needed. Start building your website. Then, if you do decide to purchase it, use offer code social. Use offer code social. I have the social hour script up. I almost gave you credit.
Oh, no.
That's fine with me.
TNT6.
I like both of our shows. Equally.
And get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes monthly and annual plans. And don't forget about free domain registrations for annual plan customer subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT6. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank them for sponsoring the Social Hour and Tech News Today. Squarespace is awesome.
They'll be sponsoring us in like 2 hours. So
yeah, you can feel free to stumble and say TNT
sneak peek. We're going to be talking about later.
All right, joining us now, as he does usually on Fridays these days, Len Peralta, internet cartoonist from LenPeralta.com to illustrate the stories. How's it going, Len? I hear your city has been shut down by Captain America.
Oh, my gosh. You would not believe the whole city is shut down for Captain America. And actually, I am going down to my favorite comic book shop this afternoon for Captain America Day, Carolyn Johns Comics, and you're in Cleveland, where I'm going to try to catch a sneak peek of Captain America, the Winter Soldier filming. Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, and Nick Fury, Sam Jackson.
All your friends. That's great.
All my buddies. All my buddies.
Said hello.
I will.
As usual, Len will be illustrating. If you're watching the video version of the podcast as we go along, if you're on the audio podcast, that's fine. It won't impair your ability to enjoy the podcast, but you might check out the video later, see what it's all about. And Darren Kitchen is off on hacking across America these days, so we're going to just pop right into the stories. And of course, there's still more NSA news coming out. Bloomberg has a really good in-depth explanation of what's going on outside of personal information. Makers of hardware, software, banks, internet security providers, all apparently sharing data with the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, and the U.S. military about things like equipment specs, software vulnerabilities, etc. This info could be used to safeguard government computers. It could also be used for infiltration of enemies or targets' computers. For instance, Microsoft actually gives data about bugs that are going to be fixed before the public fix is acknowledged. So that gives the government a leg up. McAfee does a similar sort of data sharing about emerging new threats, cyber attack patterns, vector availability, as well as analysis on the integrity of software system vulnerabilities, according to Michael Fay, CTO of McAfee. Even Sergey Brin was allowed in on a briefing on China back when Gmail was being attacked. Remember, Google said, we're pretty darn sure where this is coming from. It's coming from China. That's how he knew, according to this Bloomberg article. So you guys, this is different than spying on personal information. This is companies voluntarily going to the government and saying, hey, we're going to let you know about some bugs early on. And in a way, the Microsoft one's the weirdest, right? Where it's like, hey, here's a way to break into our operating system that we provide. We're about to fix it, but you should know about it now. Is this a good idea?
I don't know. I guess I'm just looking at this story and I'm trying to process it all. I think it's probably a good idea that the government's talking to a bunch of tech companies to figure out what kind of vulnerabilities are in the software and hardware that they're using. And having this information being discussed between the companies I guess I'm always concerned about what sensitive data is being transferred. But if it's about national security, that's always that blanket kind of concept of if we know what's going on, if we know that our hardware is secure, we can move forward. But if we find out there's vulnerabilities in our operating systems or our hardware, we got to figure out what to do.
I mean, yeah, the whole Microsoft allowing the government to know kind of what's going on before the general public, you know, they're concerned with state-sponsored attacks, right? So if there's something that can be linked back to maybe something that the government is already investigating, I can see where this would make sense, even if it ends up not there not being a direct correlation. It's kind of like a heads up. This might have something to do with some investigation that you're already conducting. In general, this stuff doesn't bother me too much because, again, the personal identity stuff is shelved, really. It's more who's attacking U.S.-based systems and why.
And the companies get classified information in return in many cases, according to the Bloomberg article.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure Sergey Brin was happy to know a little bit more about what was going on with Gmail.
And they also get indemnified if any of the information they give out results in a civil action for some reason.
Which is
that's what CISPA was all about.
Exactly.
So
they don't really feel like, uh-oh, now we're going to, this might come back to haunt us because that's part of the agreement.
What about if you're not a company in the United States, though? What if you're Huawei or ZTE, who the United States is warning companies not to purchase from them because they are in part related to the Chinese government? Doesn't that make the United States hypocritical if they are actually involved in knowing about access and vulnerabilities for the specs of software and machinery made in the United States?
Well, pretty much. But the fact is the U.S. is trying to control what hardware they see. So at least the reports claim that that Huawei has got some connection. At least that's what the U.S. thinks. They have connections to the Chinese government. So they want to be very secure in the fact whatever hardware they're using is going to not be transmitting data back. And if they're working with all these hardware companies anyway, and these are the safe guys, these are the ones anointed by the U.S. saying, you know what, we work with these companies, we know that they're not going to be taking our data and sending it elsewhere. It does make them a little hypocritical because they are investigating already. But if it's for security, it's that big, like they always hang their hat on that concept of security. So it's really hard to figure out.
Well, and security requires secrecy, so it makes it even harder for a lay person like us to figure out. And we do want security, as I've said, but at what cost? I think it is a different conversation when you're talking about specs and such. It becomes a trade conversation, less of a personal rights conversation, unless we're talking about building in backdoors into things. And there was nothing in the Bloomberg article that implied that was happening, but this kind of situation would make it a lot easier for that sort of thing, I would think. All right, let's talk about something a lot more fun. Office coming to iOS. I was firing it up this morning, actually. I don't know. What do you think, Ayaz?
I tried it out this morning, and I couldn't do anything with it because I'm not going to pay $100 this morning to do Office 365 because this version of Office for iPhone, which is not available for iPad, to use it, you need to have an Office 365 subscription. And if you don't have one, you can click a little button right in the app and pay $100. And as Tom mentioned in the news views, this was a sticking point for Microsoft and Apple, at least it was reported, because Microsoft didn't want to pay a cut to Apple every single time a person subscribed to Office 365. The basic app consists of four sections to access recent documents, SkyDrive folders, document creation and settings. You can create Word and Excel files. You can't create PowerPoint. You can view PowerPoint if you want to. The editing apparently doesn't follow the norms when it comes to iOS. You can't drag to highlight. You'll have to double-click words, so it's kind of unusual. Tom Warren found the Excel interface a little difficult to use on that small iPhone screen. And everything syncs up with SkyDrive, so you're always getting the latest things going on there. And Chris Schneider, a marketing manager at Microsoft's Office division, said, quote, "We don't view this as a standalone app."
What the heck does that mean?
It seems
that's
like
what it is.
It's this like little viewer app if you pay $100, if assuming you do this other service. So it's kind of like, yeah, you have Office on iPhone. Kinda.
Right.
Well, yeah. And when you say you got to pay $100, I don't want people to get the wrong idea. You pay $100 for an Office 365 subscription that gives you access to Office in the cloud on many devices. The app itself is free, but you have to have the subscription already.
That's right. It's not like you're paying $100 to unlock the app. But the other thing is, I've always found this strange that the HTML5 versions of Office, if you try to use their free versions, they work fine on the iPad in the browser. So people who don't have access to this and don't want to pay $100 can try it out. I'm just kind of curious why iPhone only instead of doing iPad, because iPad screams productivity with that larger screen. iPhone's got the small display. It's not exactly, it doesn't seem like the best partner for Excel.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I feel like offering it on the iPhone and not the iPad is almost like, hey, we know you're not really going to use this, but at least you'll shut up a little bit because now you can sort of get Office on iOS. Also, the whole iOS, you know, the stuff that as an iOS user you're really, really used to, as in dragging to highlight, like the double-clicking thing, that's so bizarre. It's not like it's hard, but it's going to go against any other editing, copy editing, word processing program that you might already be using in iOS. So it's that's the sort of thing that I'd just be like, ugh, this just doesn't work normally, and so I'd just rather do all my stuff somewhere else.
And when the dialog window slides in from the bottom, and to remove it, normally you just kind of tap on the top area. You have to click a button to bring it down. So it's got a lot of design language that doesn't fit iOS. So it's just a little strange that it's only available on iPhone, and it doesn't follow iPhone conventions. So why does it even exist?
Seems kind of like it's more of just a... Almost, you'd almost use it more as like a read-only companion app, right?
I am in the minority here. I actually found it quite useful. And when you said you can use Office 365 in the browser, am I wrong? I thought you also had to be a subscriber to Office 365.
The free version of Office on SkyDrive. So if you use SkyDrive on, I've done this on Chrome.
Can you still do that, though? I thought they retired that program, but I may be wrong about
that. SkyDrive, the app, but the actual, we go to SkyDrive.com and then you open up your dock. In the Word app, that's an HTML5 app, and you can run that just fine, which I found very strange.
Okay, and you've done that recently, I'm guessing. Yeah, so that part still works. But that, so there's a little work around there. That's a good point. I thought this was pretty awesome because I'm not going to do a lot of editing on an iPhone screen. I don't want it to do a lot of editing on an iPhone screen. I think it's a fair question to ask why there's no iPad version, but maybe there will be one down the road. Google Maps doesn't have an iPad version yet either. So that, you know, that's not unheard of. But as far as like, can I look at a document that I have in SkyDrive and check it out quickly on my phone? That is something I would like to do. And this app makes it nicer than having to do it in Safari on the iPhone, in my opinion.
I'm also waiting for when the iPad version will come out. What is Microsoft going to do now? Because they've claimed that for tablets, our tablets are amazing because we have Office. Is that the distinction? Will they not bring out a version for iPad just to keep the Surface tablets and all those other ones unique?
Well, I think they've kind of got an incentive to do that. It's an interesting position to be in because everyone says, where's Office for iOS? That's weird. Wouldn't you just want more people to use Office? But if Microsoft can kind of offer that so that they quiet all those cries but still provide a superior service on Microsoft products, that's great in a perfect world if they can do that. But, you know, unless you're planning on switching tablets, then if you're not using a Microsoft product, then you just end up losing out and thinking, I have other options. I'll stick with Google Docs.
They need to look at it the way Amazon looks at the Kindle, right? They put Kindle apps for the tablets, even though Amazon has their own tablets, right, with the Kindle Fire and the Kindle readers, because they know we want to get people into our universe because then they will be more likely to buy a Kindle Fire in the future, even if we're supporting them on competing tablets right now. I think Microsoft needs to look at Office that way. Absolutely. Let's talk about looking at your own genes. Do you have the right to do that, or are they patentable? This is going to be very important, Sarah, for the interpretation of the season finale of Orphan Black.
Oh, my goodness. I should start watching that show because I don't get the reference. The Supreme Court has unanimously ruled that human genes isolated by scientists at Myriad Genetics specifically may not, in fact, be patented. This was a dispute that was brought on by the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, back in 2009. They said, listen, the First Amendment of people are at stake if you've got patents on their genes because they're so broad, they keep other scientists from examining and comparing two genes specifically, BRCA1 and BRCA2. That might not mean anything to you, but those are associated with ovarian and breast cancer. So if you're carrying these genes, you have a higher risk of these sorts of things. This is important stuff. Patents were issued a long time ago and covered any scientific methods of looking at these human genes that might be developed by others. They are now invalidated. Before they were invalidated, basically, as a woman, if you thought that maybe you were at increased risk, maybe it's something that runs in your family. You couldn't have anybody except the patent holder, Myriad Genetics, look at your genes, and it was $3,000 per test. So you say, all right, well, people who can pay that, it's probably not a huge deal, but there are a lot of people who can, and that's sometimes where these patents get really messy when it is applied to your health and, you know, possible diseases. So it's very interesting, actually. Myriad can still patent its tests. So their own testing, they're still in control over. But other companies or scientists or, you know, research facilities are no longer forbidden from performing their own. The test will be non-infringing of these genes at issue. They can patent their own tests as well. I can't see any reason why this is a bad thing. I think the Supreme Court absolutely made the right decision because, again, it's like patenting genes that are inside our bodies seems pretty dangerous. Ayaz, do you agree with me or am I off base?
I totally agree with you. This reminds me of when some companies, farming companies, were trying to patent particular strains of wheat and things, and they were able to do this. And the weird thing was when this strain of wheat would blow into somebody else's fields, they could sue the competing farms about this. That was already a crazy example of a patent system going a little nuts. If it happened on the genetic level of a human, that could just lead to a huge mess. Who would want lawsuits over that kid was born about this? You owe me royalties on this child. That just these concepts are bizarre. But the tests, I understand why that'd be patentable. And I think this is actually a huge amount of great logic. Supreme Court saying, look, yeah, we don't want this patentable because this could create larger problems in the long run.
Of course, Tom, Myriad Genetics says, you know, this is now, we're basically lowering the standards for these testings. The whole reason that we had the patent is because, you know, we're the experts here. You know, the ACLU says patients will have greater access to genetic testing. Scientists can engage in research on these genes without fear of being sued. Is there, did Myriad, do they lose anything here? Well, they obviously lose anything, but yeah, you know, do they lose
a bunch of money?
Yeah, I mean, is it all about money, or do you buy the fact that they say, listen, we're trying to control the greatest experience for our patients?
No, I'm not a patent lawyer, you know, but we deal with this stuff enough that I have to say it seems pretty clear to me that a previously naturally existing element shouldn't be patentable. The method for discovering it, maybe, and that's what the Supreme Court said. The test itself can be patentable. And that's what Myriad should build its business on. We have the best test. We're the most accurate. Not, oh, I mean, think about it. You know, let's go back to say, like, the ability to discover blood, when we developed the microscope and you could now see individual blood corpuscles. Should the corpuscles have been patented or the microscope? Well, freaking obvious. The microscope gets patented there, not the actual blood cells themselves. And to me, it's the same situation. You don't get to patent the thing you discovered. You don't get to patent North America, but you can patent the ships. You can patent the test. And I think this is eminently reasonable here. I'm trying to find the Clarence Thomas quote in this Wired story, but he wrote the majority opinion and basically said in pretty plain language that abstract idea that nature has made the two genes different in a manner that increases that person's risk of cancer is not patentable. It's
right.
It's nature.
Yes, exactly. I agree with you.
I think
Justice
we all.
Thomas.
Just, you're talking about Clarence Thomas, not
right.
Me. They weren't calling me because I'm not a justice.
Right.
I believe in justice, though.
I said Justice Merritt.
Microsoft to open 600 Windows stores inside of Best Buy. This news broke actually yesterday morning. But I got to thinking about it. We were talking about it in the chat room yesterday morning. And it reminded me, like, not only do they have Samsung Experience Mini stores opening in Best Buys here in the U.S., 1,400 Best Buys by early summer, staffed by Samsung employees. That's similar to the Windows Store, which will be built inside 500 Best Buys and 100 Canada Best Buys and future shops between now and September. 1,500 to 2,000 square feet areas separated off with Microsoft-trained sales associates, about two per location, and there are already, there have been since 2006 or maybe even earlier, Apple shops inside of Best Buys. I think more than 600 of the Best Buys have an Apple shop with specially trained solution consultants. Is this the future of big box retail? I know this is Best Buy and it's in the United States, but I think this applies worldwide. If you've got one of these big box stores and they really can't get the foot traffic in anymore, and we're seeing Sony has stores in malls now, Microsoft, Samsung, Dell has got kiosks in malls. Is the future of the big box store to bring in the brands and let them operate their own mini stores, kind of like a mini mall?
It's weird because it's really, the products don't really change. Instead of saying, here's the TV section, here's the, you know, the USB drive section and that sort of thing. And you figure out, well, maybe you really like Samsung products, so you'll gravitate towards that, you know, certain hard drive that all the stuff that's still sold in Best Buy. It's just arranged by brand. So, I don't know, as a consumer, I'm like, I don't know if I really care all that much. But if you don't really know exactly what you're looking for, I guess that changes the experience, because instead of going towards, you know, you're looking at a bunch of TVs and maybe something stands out to you that's got the specs that you want, you just go to the brand that you like the best. I like Microsoft. I'm going to buy something in the Microsoft section because I like them.
Yeah, somebody called it a micro mall in the chat room. It seems like when you see a Best Buy, what they have is great visibility. You know where their stores are. They're giant blue and this giant yellow tag. If you know this is where you can go for all your electronics, and then you're going to have these specific experiences when you go in, there's nothing like going to a Best Buy where you're like, hey, does that device work? Half the devices used to not work when you'd come in. They'd be all located in the PC section, or you'd go into the phone section. It'd be all these dummy devices. And these companies like Microsoft, Samsung, they don't want products that are there that they can't sell, because it makes no sense. Because if they don't work, how will you get the user experience? By having their own trained staff there, they have a better chance of moving the hardware than Best Buy used to have. It just seems like this could be the future of the big box stores. And the other thing, what about like Barnes & Noble? Same kind of thing. You got this large retail footprint. Why not start leasing out parts of it and just becoming micro malls or mini malls, whatever you want to call them?
Magnolia
Amazon
does.
Section in the Barnes & Noble?
Well, that's an unlikely partnership, but why not? Why not make money on your enemy?
Magnolia does this really well in Best Buys. I don't know if you guys have been in a Magnolia section recently.
I thought that was just a Magnolia was a brand of Best Buy.
No, Magnolia is its own brand. It's like a store within a store. The people who work at Magnolia are not Best Buy employees. They're Magnolia employees.
Is that why it's so nice?
Yeah. I mean, I've had good experiences there, because you walk in and you're like, okay, I want to talk home theater audio. And they know exactly, they're trained. They're trained in a specific area where... I'm sure that, you know, I've never worked at a Best Buy, but I'm sure that as a Best Buy employee, yeah, you might be sort of like, I'm in the, you know, the home, you know, refrigerator section. So maybe I know more than this gal over here who hangs up more in the software section. But you kind of have to know a little bit more about a much larger store. So in a way, it might be a better experience for the consumer.
But here's the thing, right? The reason these big box retail chains are going down is because we all buy online now. But we still like the idea of being able to go and play with it, even if we don't buy it there. Is it still worthwhile for Microsoft, Apple, Samsung to pay Best Buy to have presence in these stores so that they sell their products eventually, even if they don't sell it right there inside the Best Buy?
Well, yeah, they're building a brand recognition, because when you go into Best Buy, the company that can have a mini store, you're going to see their giant logo glowing. You're going to see that they have a bunch of products. They're probably not going to have every product the company makes, but start building that brand awareness that at some point, yeah, I bought this at Best Buy or played with it at Best Buy, but eventually you go to Amazon.com, you're like, I'm going to check out the Samsung Galaxy whatever.
And then what happens to the little guys, the Acers and the smaller brands?
Well, they're either stocked on the shelves with nobody, or they have to do their own mini shops. So maybe Best Buy becomes a lock when it comes to electronics, and we'll just have manufacturer by manufacturer by manufacturer. It'll end up looking like CES, I guess.
Meanwhile, once you've bought your device and you get it home, you want to make sure it doesn't get stolen.
Yeah, there's a initiative going on called Secure Our Smartphones Initiative. It's a multiple state. It revolves officials from multiple states. New York's Attorney General and San Francisco's District Attorney announced this initiative, and what it's trying to do is end smartphone theft by asking the industry to develop technology to discourage theft. They say, quote, "It's totally unacceptable that we have an epidemic of crime when we believe it can be eliminated if the technological fixes that we believe are available are put into place." This was said by co-chair Eric Schneiderman. The coalition is trying to get manufacturers to equip all smartphones with a kill switch, thereby making these devices paperweights when thieves try to go sell them again. But would a kill switch really stop people, or is that going to create a cottage industry of people who have devices that unbrick devices to sell them again?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess how dead is dead? Is it mostly dead, or is it really all the way dead?
He's only mostly dead.
Right.
So the thing is,
is there always a way to bring back a smartphone from the dead if somebody who's not supposed to have it has it? If so, black market continues to exist.
And what about the carriers in this whole thing? If the phone is, let's say it's unbricked. So let's say you have this unbrickable device. It gets back on the carriers. Shouldn't the carriers be able to track the phones? Because they have that unique identifier. Why are they allowing these stolen phones back on their networks?
Well, that's a very good question. Like, you could just ban the IMEI.
Exactly.
I know there are ways of modifying the IMEI. And that's where this comes down to me is, like, if there is a way to undo the kill switch, you don't think that the criminals are going to figure out how to hack it to undo the kill switch themselves? I mean, we've seen jailbreaking and rooting happening for so long. I don't know that this is 100% criminal proof, no matter how you design it.
So the real question is can technology even stop a crime at all? I don't know if this is even possible. Because because it's technology. This is a computer. This phone is a computer. You can always mess with it. You can modify it. Do you think this coalition is misguided, or should there be a kill switch? Would this stop more casual thieves, I guess, as it were?
Yeah, it's like a speed bump along the way. Maybe it's good enough for that, because then you have to have a little more sophistication. We know that jailbreaking and rooting is not as easy for the general populace as it is for folks who are really into it. So then you cut down the number of criminals and the opportunities to just those who are really sophisticated technologically.
Well, sure. I mean, there's probably two different kinds. Well, I mean, I'm putting them into two general categories, but it's like you have somebody who steals your phone and, you know, wants to make a quick buck. And then there's somebody who steals your phone because they can give that phone to somebody who actually understands how to somehow bring it back and sell it almost as if it was never yours in the first place. So sure. I mean, you kind of cut down on that first wave of people who, you know, oh, the phone's bricked. I don't know. I was just, you know, trying to make $100 or something. Now I got to figure out something else to steal. The thing is that, I mean, theft, smartphone theft is rampant and really dangerous. Certainly in San Francisco it is. I've heard the same of New York, and I'm sure a lot of other metropolitan areas have the same problem. And, you know, you get violence associated with that. And sure, you know, you've got people in the chat room saying, well, that, you know, phone manufacturers, they just want to sell more phones. So what do they care? You'll just buy another phone when it gets stolen. But you also might not buy an iPhone if you hear too many stories about little old ladies who get pushed down, you know, or are held at, you know, knife point because they want their phone stolen. You might say, you know what? I just don't care that much. I'm going to buy a stupid phone that nobody wants.
That's why I used to keep an iPod Shuffle on me and on the subway. But in my backpack was where the actual wire was going to, like a different iPod that was mostly stolen. People love to steal that particular model of it. So I always had this little crappy thing that people would see, but that would be the other way around it. You make a good point about this idea that it could stop people from buying phones if they are constantly in fear of losing them. But I know a friend of mine had their phone stolen because it was just sitting there in the department store for like a second. That kind of opportunistic thieves, they might not exist after a while if this kind of kill switch is in. And Apple tried this, right? Just now with iOS 7, they're saying that you have to activate the phone with the Apple ID. So that might be a helpful way to do it. But a kill switch, I don't know if that's going to really stop. It won't end anything.
Padre SJ has a really good point. He says, this is much ado about nothing. We're getting to the point at which smartphone market is mature. They're becoming a commodity item. And once it reaches that point, CIT in general, theft really doesn't matter anymore because the margins have moved elsewhere. So maybe we are starting to solve the problem at the point that it becomes less of a problem. I mean, the biggest fear of iPhone theft was when the iPhone was still rare and extraordinarily valuable. Now it's everywhere. It's not as juicy of a target as it used to be.
I mean, cars are still stolen. There are methods to stop their parts from being stripped out. Their VIN numbers, VIN is on everything.
Yeah, but cars are very much more valuable.
I'm saying car parts and things about trying to stop theft because, yeah, I wouldn't say it's commodity, but these cars are pretty much the same. So there's a lot of rampant theft of that. But there's still techniques to try to bring that down as well.
We also have a long way to go before iPhones just, you know, are iPhones or any smartphone, but you used iPhone as an example, are not worth stealing. You steal it for $0 and you sell it for $50, someone's going to keep doing that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I said it's not as juicy of a target on purpose because I don't mean to say that it is not a target or a valuable target at all. But maybe the problem is becoming less severe.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Because I like walking down the street in, you know, my head in the clouds with my iPhone out, not worrying that I will be mugged. That's what I like doing. You need I'd like to more of that.
To the moon.
But I apparently live in the wrong neighborhood.
Speaking of neighborhoods, New York is partnering up with Nextdoor.com to really provide targeted services over the web to neighborhoods.
Yeah, you know, you might not have heard of Nextdoor, but I know about it because when I moved about 6 months ago, I joined Nextdoor because I didn't want to leave the neighborhood that I lived in. And I thought, well, I better use this service. It's a social network, actually, that's designed to so you get to know your physical neighbors based on addresses that are verified. You either sort of verify it by linking it up to a, as I did, a bank account, you know, and depositing like a couple of cents, or you get something delivered to your house as a postcard that has a special number on it, just to basically prove I really do live here. I live in this neighborhood. I'm close to Joe, who lives a couple doors down from me. It actually works out really well. And the whole idea is, it's kind of like a mini Craigslist, but it's also a, hey, somebody, you know, stole my bike. Here's where I live. Please be on the lookout, or can you help? And it's a pretty interesting community. And by definition, you never really have too many people in your social network because the neighborhood can only grow so much until you're physically in a different neighborhood. Mayor Bloomberg says, we like Nextdoor. And in fact, we're going to use Nextdoor to push notices out into various neighborhoods in all five boroughs of New York City. We're going to pull information back out of Nextdoor. We're going to launch about 1,800 individual neighborhoods across, a very, very big area. Obviously, New York is extremely densely populated. And New York officials will be able to initiate discussions and read neighborhood responses to discussions within Nextdoor. Now, they won't be able to see discussions that are strictly between neighbors. So this isn't just sort of like, now the government's and all of our private social networks and now they know where
that's
I live.
What
they
say.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The partnership is with the city and Nextdoor that supposedly will ensure there's a Nextdoor network available, not just for all neighborhoods, but that Nextdoor is going to hire some folks and put in what they call field organizers between 8 and 11 in New York, in various neighborhoods that are obviously more popular, basically to kind of keep the conversation. What do we need to know? You know, is there, you know, some crime activity? Can we help initiate a neighborhood watch group? That sort of thing. Okay. So my first question is, this all sounds fine and good, but we're talking about municipalities partnering with a private company that doesn't actually make any money yet, and we all know how Silicon Valley companies tend to come and go. It's based in San Francisco. Ayaz, is this the right infrastructure for New York to adopt?
Well, in New York, I would assume if the government's on it, maybe in theory people would be more aware of it. I've looked in the Nextdoor a bunch of times because I want to know my neighbors here in Petaluma. And it's just weird knocking on doors and saying, hi, I live over here. It just seems a little bizarre to me because I'm from New York and you just don't do that. So this idea that maybe New York will educate people so they know that this thing is out there, because I would imagine that if I looked on Nextdoor, there's not going to be a lot of people on it that happen to be in my neighborhood, because somebody's got to bring awareness in. So it might be the smartest idea to have a giant city like New York have this, although it just screams of that Seinfeld episode putting the name tags on everybody in the apartment building. I don't know if this is going to work or increase.
It's voluntary, right? You don't have to do it.
No, certainly not.
Do you look like a jerk if you're not on it?
No, you don't.
What do you have to hide, Lane? Why aren't you on Nextdoor?
Well, I am on Nextdoor.
That would be the good way to do it, is to be like, hey, it's voluntary, but if you hate your community, it could actually foster a better sense of community. I used it in San Rafael, and really all it ever had on it was lost pets, which, you know, noble cause there. But I didn't get a whole lot else out of it other than like, okay, I'll keep an eye out for that chihuahua.
But that's kind of where it starts, right? It's like, oh, it starts at lost pets. And you're like, oh, okay, these are actually people that, you know, could use my help. And it fosters these relationships with people who you really might see at the stop sign.
Yeah.
Or at the post office nearby.
I'm part of Nextdoor in the neighborhood, just a few blocks from Twit here, actually, and it thrives like big time. It's super active. Everybody in the neighborhood is on it, and it's much more than just lost pets.
That's sure.
I will also say that it is. I have found it almost impossible to figure out how to change my neighborhood since I've moved.
Yeah, that's actually a problem that I have too, Tom.
Yeah,
Nextdoor really wants to not believe that I changed neighborhood.
No, people don't move. What is
nope,
this?
Nope, you live here. That's where you
what
live.
What are you, nomads? Yeah.
What are you just going to just abandon all your friends because you moved across town? You monster.
You poor. All right, let's move on to the randomizer. Foursquare has teamed up with Samsung. This is a total marketing ploy, but it's working on me, to give you the Foursquare time machine. This is a way to look, if you've used Foursquare enough, at where you've been in your life. It shows you an animated map based on your Foursquare check-ins. Mine took a while to load because I've been using this thing for a long time. It started in Austin for me because that's where Foursquare, where I first started using Foursquare at South by Southwest. And then it just kind of goes on this animated map showing like, oh, here you are going from Brooklyn to Manhattan and back again. And now you're back home and it shows your commute to CNET back in the day. And now here's your vacation in Hawaii. Here's all the places you went there. I just find this fascinating.
I want this to be a permanent feature. Like, what did you do last night? Oh, I see.
What, because you forgot?
Find
my evening.
Find my evening. Yeah, exactly.
Find my weekend.
Find my Las Vegas.
Find my weekend.
I like that. Are we looking at a demo, or is this somebody's actual
thing? This is a demo. This is for a demo for non-Foursquare users.
Oh, but, I was like, gosh, Tom spent a lot of time in New York and Queens specifically.
Yeah.
This isn't yours. This is just it's just a demo.
Here's mine. There it is, starting in Austin. And just going around downtown Austin. And then they have this little flying thing. And you're like, oh, and then you headed back home. And
This is why I use Foursquare. This is exactly why I still use Foursquare every single day, is because I like the breadcrumb trail aspect of it. So this is just a neat visual of like, yeah, I really have been to a lot of places. This is, you know, makes you feel good about yourself.
I like it too. I was like, oh, I remember that.
It
like,
feel good
it was
anyway.
It was reminding me of things like, oh, that's when we went to Kona, and that shows us driving around the coast, and that's that little town we went to. It's pretty cool, actually.
I could build this with a Flickr API or something, so you can look at your photos as well as you're doing all of this.
See, I did go.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
To get those memories back as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, you know, Foursquare now, there are a lot of photos that are attached to check-ins, so maybe that's the next step of this.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Great timeline kind of thing.
Yeah, it's good for history. Let's move on to the future calendar.
Okay, Bloomberg's next big thing summit is happening. Starts next Monday the 17th, runs through Tuesday the 18th in Half Moon Bay, California. It's a nice place to have a conference. Also on Monday, Aereo is coming to Atlanta if you are a pre-registered user. If you're in the Atlanta metro area, you can take advantage of that starting next week. Also on Monday, some Wikipedia users, because it's rolling out, will start to see the new visual editor for Wikipedia. It's designed to make the whole experience a little bit more visually pleasing without the expense of losing information. And Nokia is getting a major smartphone camera ready to reveal to us on July 11th. Interessante.
Zoom reinvented. Yikes.
Yeah. Some kind of 40 megapixel something is what the rumor is.
Well, no, they have to, you know, Samsung took the win out of Nokia's sales. Nokia has to be like, we have a billion megapixels.
Megapixels.
And it won't even look like a old SLR.
No.
It's a phone.
We don't scram it into the back of the phone like Samsung.
Yeah.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Why, it's a message from Cole. It says, AT&T crew, I wanted to point out that messenger apps are also really useful for messaging people internationally and avoiding those SMS charges. I have a Canadian friend, I'm in the USA, who messages me regularly using Google Hangouts. He's currently in Kuwait for work, so we can still message with pictures, etc., and not worry about weird charges or our carriers being able to even send the messages out in the first place. Love the show.
Yeah, that's what I was ineptly trying to explain when I was saying my friends were in from overseas for E3, and they were using, one of them was using Twitter. I'm wondering if he actually uses one of these other messaging apps and just didn't think I did. And I should have said, like, hey, are you on Kakao or WhatsApp or something? Because that would have been the perfect solution for international messaging, even though both of us were in the USA, because he's on the international plan. So good point, Cole. Well explained. Thank you for that. And that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Len Peralta has been quietly illustrating our stories in the background. Len, you've been doing a great job. Show us your work.
Sure thing. Sure thing, Tom. Going backwards here with the first story. This is the story about the U.S. Giving information to FBI and stuff like that. Of course, the U.S. is giving the FBI IAS's information.
I'm honored.
On that
yeah.
one.
Thank you.
The Men in Black.
Story two was the, yes, Men in Black. Story two was the was Office on the iPhone.
And you're taking a point of view in this one.
Yeah, I sort of beat up on Microsoft this today. Thanks, Microsoft, for yet another thing I don't need. So I don't know. You know, you can send your, if you're a Microsoft fan, send your complaints to me at len@idontcare.com. Three, the human gene story.
This one's my favorite. Love it.
This is from the It Sounded Better on Paper department. Human genes, with a little bit of a nod. It looks a little bit a nod to
a creepy feet coming out of the pants are hilarious.
Yeah,
that goes out to Scott Johnson. It feels very Scott Johnson-y.
It does. It's an homage.
So human genes, pants. Ladies and gentlemen. Apple has geniuses. What will Microsoft have? I didn't name them, but maybe the chat room could name them. Of course, this gentleman saying, "Me help you." I don't know. Once again, beating up on Microsoft. Send the complaints, not to TNT.
Oh, Len.
I did right. The Hamburglar and the iPhone. You know,
yeah.
little right. guy stealing phones, and then finally, I was a little bit. That was hard. The next door thing, that was hard. But I know it's starting in New York or is in New York. Bloomberg is doing something. You know, so there's a neighbor there saying, "Hey, I'm programming here."
With a Yankees hat on.
With a Yankees hat on, correct.
That's awesome.
And those are the tech news stories of the day as drawn by me.
Brilliant as usual, Len Peralta. Let folks know where they can find these and your other fine works.
Yes, you can follow me at Len Peralta on Twitter. From there, you'll be able to find my online store where I will probably sell this human genes one.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Probably that'll be in the store, as well as some of the other ones I've been doing for the past, past 3 or 4 weeks now. You can see some of the images I've done there. They're all for sale at peraltartsy.myshopify.com.
Don't expect any calls from Microsoft to hire you as a client anytime soon.
That's a shame. Well, I'm sorry. It's all in good fun. It's all in good fun.
He criticizes because he loves so much.
I do.
He
cares. I love
Don't forget, you can submit stories at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That help us figure out our lineup each and every day. We look at what people are voting on in there, what they're interested in. Helps us put together what we're going to cover each and every day. Don't forget, if you liked a particular moment at any time during any of the Twitch shows, including ours, submit it at twit.tv/bestof. Helps us put our end of year best of shows together. I am almost gone for a long weekend. You can still find us at twit.tv/TNT. You can also call us 260-TNT-SHOW. Email us TNT@twit.tv. I will be out on Monday, but Lon Seidman will be the guest along with Sarah and Iaz, and I'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.